Hey, what's up? My name is Nick Russo.
Hey, I'm Aaron Austin.
And welcome back to our seventh podcast on radio.com of Country Not Country. Today, we're going to talk about some of the findings at Tin Man Jam, kind of a Tin Man Jam recap.
Yeah, a little the finer moments and the most memorable moments.
Going to play some interview clips from Ryan Hurd, Lee Bryce, Ashley McBride, and Kane Brown. And then we're going to talk about the Peloton commercial. Did I get that right?
Oh, yeah. You got it right.
Yeah.
The one that's been so controversial.
Yeah, the lady finally spoke out today, the lady from the commercial. So we'll play her reply on the Today Show from this morning. All right, this is our third time starting over this thing because I think now we have the mics all recording. Aaron?
I'm here. Am I here?
Yeah, you're here.
Okay,
all right, you're all good. Right. Now, this is our... we've said this like three times. This is our seventh episode on radio.com. Thank you, everybody who's been listening. Apparently, people have listened, though.
Oh, they have.
Yeah, I heard the numbers were like 350 listens or downloads. I don't really know how they break down the stuff because I don't have access to it. But
300 listens.
In a month? That's
a lot. Okay, you know what? I'll take it. I appreciate it. I will say I do know one girl that listened to our podcast because she listened to the one where we were talking about our rodeo predictions. So,
oh, really?
Yeah.
See, I didn't get any like firsthand feedback on that one.
Yeah.
But I saw a lot of people were reacting to it. You never know, like when you post it on Facebook, if anybody's actually
clicking on the link.
Yeah, if they're just throwing out their comment on what they think is going to happen. Yeah,
no, that's true. Because I posted an article the other day and I just saw the headline and I was like, oh my God, if you want a good laugh today. And it was terrible. It was about the pigeons having cowboy hats in Vegas.
Oh, I did see that.
And it looks hilarious. But then when you read the article, you realize it's like animal abuse because somebody's like gluing on the hats.
Oh,
so I'm
gosh.
Like, if you want a good laugh today, and then I'm like, oh my God, here's the Aaron, like this big animal person. And I'm like making fun of it. I'm like, oh, I am now that ass. I did that. I am that person that does that. Oh
you know, that's awful because I thought that was actually kind of funny and cute. You know, like
yeah.
I imagine it. But I was really wondering how they would get the pigeon to sit still so they could tie the rope around its, you know.
Yeah, or like the
bonnet or whatever, like how they get it on the head.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
What about the video of the owl that was caught in the barbed wire fence? Did you see that one?
In
Colorado?
I feel like I've seen that before, yeah.
He's like, his wing is caught in the barbed wire, and he's like, his head turns that almost full 360 looking at the park ranger.
Yeah.
It's so creepy looking.
Oh.
So,
yeah, it's crazy.
All right, so in our rodeo prediction podcast, somebody that you brought up, we brought up at Tin Man Jam on Monday night. So
when we gave out our predictions, we mentioned Maren Morris, and I was like, there's no way she's going to be at rodeo waddling on stage, you know, because she's about ready to pop about that time, apparently.
Yeah, because Ryan Hurd was at Tin Man Jam Monday night, and I didn't set out talking to him to get any sort of like undercover information about it, but he was talking about how he feels like an honorary Texan because, you know, he and Maren have been together so long.
Yeah.
And I asked him if he'd ever been to Rodeo Houston. And so let's play his reaction because I feel like he kind of gives it away. So let's see what he says.
I know it's such a big deal down here. I mean, you hear so many stories about like George Strait and all these other people who like that was their moment, was like the rodeo. And it's like,
it's like a pinnacle.
80,000 people or something like that, right?
Yeah.
So I'm from Kalamazoo, Michigan. I'm from Chicago, Illinois. So you're like, oh, it's a bit of a foreign thing, but it's been fun to learn about it. And I know Maren's obviously excited about it. So,
See, at the end, that little hesitation sounded like he was...
He was like, oh, man, I let the cat out of the bag, you and your big mouth.
and it was such a natural flow of conversation that he didn't even realize he was doing it until it was over with, though.
Yeah.
And then from right there on, I think the pace just kind of changed. We went and talked about something else. I wasn't going to try to drag it out of him. But you did say Maren Morris could be there.
Yeah, I did. And then I was like, there's no way she'll be there waddling on stage. Because I figured they would have, if they had Casey last year, Maren has had a great year. They would try to get, you know, her because she's had some serious momentum going.
Absolutely. And the other part was I'm kind of convinced that the Luke Combs dream is scratched and the Post Malone dream.
You know what? I'm not going to give up on my dreams.
Yeah. Don't give up on Maren. Yeah.
I'm not giving up.
We believe that there would be they would double dip. Luke would still play rodeo and his Toyota Center show, as would Post Malone. But I don't know if they're going to do that because Minds have said they don't like to oversaturate the artist.
Which is true. I mean, I can see that, but it's like, my thought is, strike while the iron is hot, my friends.
Yeah, and rodeo, to me, isn't your quintessential show. It's not saturation. Like, it's you know, the artist
is... I mean, it's a taste. It's a snippet. I mean, that's what's so crazy. I mean, everybody loves going to rodeo, which is, you know, it is awesome, and it's a great cause and helps out so many kids with education. But as far as the... If you're going there strictly for one artist and going to see a concert, it's so much different of an experience than... You know, going to see their show when they do their full production.
You're so far away from them, you can't really feel the energy. And then the artist, they try really hard not to like let that affect them, but you know it does because they've got to feel like they're practicing almost because the people aren't even right there. You know, like your people are 50-100 feet away.
Yeah, and not only that, but it's a much shorter show. It's only 60 minutes, so.
And the acoustics are tough. Mm-hmm. So, like, sure, you hear it and you love it, but it's like, man, like, it's just not, it's not the best environment for a concert.
Right.
But anyway, so now, Tin Man Jam, though, what were your takeaways? What'd you think? Biggest show of the year, obviously.
You know, for us, we work on it. I think on stage I said it's like having a baby because, I mean, we talk about it. We do all these events surrounding it. You're like, what are you laughing? You're chuckling over there.
Yeah, because I remember you were talking about it being like a baby on stage, and I'm like, a baby? Like,
yeah, because you looked at me. I can sense that because I was like, we work so, like, today is like having a baby. And you looked at me like I was high. And I was like, no, because, you know, it's like, all of this goes into, so much goes into the preparation to that one day. And then it's like, boom, it's here. You know, it's like you had a baby that day. Yeah.
I feel it.
Or, you know, you get married or whatever it is. But yeah.
It's like the big day. It really is. Yeah.
But yeah, I thought there was some amazing moments. You know, I missed a lot of the first set with like Ryan Hurd, Matt Stell. And you know, I thought the moment with Carly Pearce and Lee Bryce was pretty awesome when they got to sing their new song together.
Real quick, Ryan Hurd in that first set, I didn't realize he had written Sunrise, Sunburn, Sunset.
I didn't either.
By Luke Bryan. And man, like, it was just cool. Like, to me, that it changed the whole dynamic when he opened with that song, because I don't think it was like the biggest Luke Bryan hit, obviously, but it's a really well-known song. And from the get, we were singing along. Like, the crowd had a song they could sing along and kind of like tie to an artist that they knew really well, you know? And so I thought that was really cool.
Well, and at the moment, he's so new and, he's got fans, but people are still getting to know him. And so to know that he had that also piece of country music, aside from his own.
Well, he wrote Lady Antebellum, What If I Never Get Over You?
Which I thought he would sing, and he didn't. And I was disappointed.
Yeah, I wondered why. I think he probably just went with Luke Bryan instead because of, you know, typical star power, if you will. But I think if he had, I think if I had known that, maybe I would have suggested it to him too, because I'm not saying that I got that kind of power, but there have been times where I've talked to them before the show and I talk about one of their songs and then they perform it. And I always wonder if, like, maybe they're not sure what they're going to perform, and then they hear me talk about a song that, and they're like, "Oh, they really like this song. Here, let's play that one."
Oh yeah, a Tin Man Jam.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that one's a little different. I mean, you don't have a set list; you literally get to sing three or four songs, and that's it.
And Matt Stell was really good. I thought, you know, I was super super shocked with, you know, how brilliant he was in the idea of, he's like an all around talent. Like, he's not just a good singer songwriter, he's also, you know, really athletic and really bright. Like, he was going to the Harvard, it wasn't going to Harvard, but Harvard has a pre-med school. It's like an extension of Harvard where they have these little, you know, subsidiary schools, and he got accepted into their pre-med program. I don't care how you want to cut it. If it's a Harvard pre-med program, it's probably pretty good.
Yeah. Well, you're obviously no dummy.
Exactly. Yeah.
But yeah, no, when you said that, I thought, what? This isn't fair. He's like 6'7". He's gifted at basketball. He plays guitar. He sings. He can carry a tune. Oh, and he's good looking. Oh, and then, hi, I'm a total smarty pants, and I could go to Harvard if I wanted to.
Yeah. Ugh. Like, some people get it.
It's like that moment you're like, well, I might be a failure, but...
Well, it's like, man, what do I have the ability to tap into those kind of skills?
You know what? That's the thing. I was thinking, like, God, I wish I was multi-talented at many things, but I can't. I mean,
well, you can think and talk at the same time really well.
Is that like rubbing your head and patting your belly at the same time?
Kind of. Not everyone can do this.
I mean, maybe, but still, it's a little bit different. I can't play an instrument, so.
But Ashley McBride kind of stole the first set.
Oh, yeah. That when she sang One Night Standards, I was like, yes.
So good. Yeah. And I got that one on video. And as soon as she sings the first song, the way the crowd reacts is everything. Mm-hmm. You know, you're like, man, everyone was in it. They knew it.
And the great moment, not only of her singing the One Night Standards, but the part where she said that's the first time she ever heard it played on the radio was on the Bowl. I was like, what? I don't know if you just made that up, but I'm going to believe it, and that's amazing.
She actually told me that before she went on stage.
What? Radio will never go away. It's still the most important thing. When I heard it today, I looked over, and Angela was driving, and she had chills, and she was like, is this the first time you've heard it on terrestrial? I said, yeah.
See, that reaction is everything.
What? So it really, like, and that song's been out for a hot second.
I just got goosebumps now.
Yeah.
Every time I hear her say that, I get goosebumps again because, like, it's such a real feeling, you know? And then also, ain't gonna lie, it's kind of cool hearing her say radio will never go away. It's one of the most important things.
And hearing her say that it was on the Bull. Oh, yeah.
I have that on video also, by the way. So, and it's just a special moment because we don't know. We sometimes take for granted how much it means to them to hear that. You know, that's always their dream is to be on the radio.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, we hear ourselves on the radio.
But you still like it, right? You still like it when you hear your name on the radio?
Well, like when I hear my name, I'm like, oh, okay. And every once in a while, if I hear one of my commercials play, I'll, like, listen to it. And so, but there's other times where I hear my voice come on the radio and I want to, like, get in a little hole and, like, not listen to myself because I...
Well, one thing for sure, if you were driving down the road and you were listening to the radio and somebody said... you know, said your name, like in the context of, you know, something good, it would make you feel good.
Oh, for sure.
Like it never gets old. Like we sometimes get desensitized to what that feeling is like, but you could, I've tried it here in Houston with people and you say their name and it makes their day.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I know I've heard, I can't remember what the artist was, but it was some artist and they were in an interview and they talked about, they heard their song on the radio and they were getting ready, you know, waiting for the DJ to come on afterwards and say something. And they ended up just talking about something else and how disappointed they were.
Oh, that makes me feel like it was me.
No, I mean, it was like, it was, you know, just in life. You know what I mean?
Got you, yeah. I got you.
Like they weren't even here, but it was just kind of funny. It's like, oh, I wonder how many of them think that way. But
well, I think everyone enjoys it because the radio is kind of a mystic sort of thing. Like, and you know, I talked to Ryan Hurd about that. I don't know if I have that piece. I might have it, but where it's theater of the mind. That's the beautiful part about music is music makes us think these things and we never actually see anything. Like you're not seeing anything. You're only hearing it and then processing it in your brain. And then you see this picture in your head. And it's the same thing that happens with the radio with us when we talk to them. They hear, you know, the audience hears the DJ say something and then they picture it in their head. So it's theater of the mind, whether it's music or radio. So,
yeah, that's an interesting little thought. Yeah.
So more about Ashley McBride. She is the youngest of six.
That is a lot of kids in that family.
I'm telling you. And I didn't realize, because I was looking up, trying to find out about her family and find out about her, because there's no background information anywhere. You watch interviews and nobody really says anything. So she was the youngest of six. She was the second of two girls. And lasagna on Christmas was pretty much the go-to because it fed a lot of people, didn't cost a whole lot, and it was really good. She said they pretty much fought over the remote control on Christmas. Like, that was kind of, you know, just sounds like just kind of a loud, rambunctious group of six, you know?
Yeah. And I kind of like the lasagna for Christmas.
Well, we do raviolis and meatballs in my house. So
oh, do you?
I felt like the more I talked to Ashley McBride, the more I felt like I knew her. We're also really close to age. I think she's like... she's like 30 days old, younger than me.
Okay.
And just something about her. And I think she might be Italian. I'm going to go ahead and go on. If she's eating lasagna for Christmas, like,
well, I don't know. I mean, McBride, that sounds like, you know, sounds Irish to me.
Oh, maybe. And Irish and Italian's kind of mixed a lot, you know?
Yeah. I mean,
when they were coming over on the Mayflower.
And they like to have lots of kids.
Well, they did. My mom was like one of six, I believe.
Oh, was she really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You know what's funny? I had one of my Facebook friends posted a picture. They met Ashley McBride and they were super excited about it. And they said, I felt like I felt like I've known her my entire life or something. And I just thought, oh, that's really cool.
And another person who was super down to earth, he always is, but he's super soft spoken and quiet, is Kane Brown.
Oh, for sure.
Like, I think he just gets nervous. I think he's just nervous about saying the wrong thing. Or, you know, he's just, there's a little bit of guardedness maybe, but it's not, it's just naturally who he is. He's just kind of not a talkative dude.
I feel like I heard that about him, that he is like kind of maybe shy. I feel like maybe or I don't know who it was, but they said they saw him at some event when he first came out as an artist. And when he came out to sing for this like showcase, he barely acknowledged the crowd.
I think that was Bruce, our old boss. He was saying that when the first time he saw him, there was like no stage presence, no idea what he was doing.
Yeah, like he had his back to the crowd or something. So it was like, I mean, he's definitely, if that's what happened, he's definitely come a long way, you know, in the fact of now he's got all these fans. He can still like, but no one says you got to jump around on stage.
Yeah, his style is just acoustic. Like to me, he sounds best acoustic.
Oh my God. That's one thing I did notice during his set. I was like, man, he just sounds like how he does on the radio. Like you don't have to sit there and process the crap out of him. I mean, he's just real.
Yeah, I thought the same thing. I could see him going to the studio. They play the track and he's singing to it. And it's just like nothing for him. Yeah. He just sits there and sings because he's, you know, it's effortless. You know, it really works out good. And he did talk about changing his diaper for the first time.
Oh, so yeah, he's got the new daughter.
Let's play it.
Man, honestly, I just changed my first diaper because Kate went to, she wasn't at home and she had a messy diaper and she was crying. So I don't like to get down there just because it's my daughter, you know, and I felt like if I was a female and my dad was changing me and I could say yes or no, I'd probably say no.
What do you think?
I mean, well, okay, so here's my first thought. Okay, whatever. But seriously, if they have a baby again and it's a boy, he better be changing every diaper.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that I understand what he's saying. It's also kind of he just sounds like a young dad to me.
Yeah, I can see that for sure.
And but I also see what he's saying. Like, I'm pretty sure that if a daughter was like, gets to pick her mom or dad, she's probably going to be more comfortable with dad, right? Or dude, a baby doesn't know comfort.
Well, I mean,
like that.
I guess maybe they might be more comfortable with mom, but that would be the same for a little boy because, you know, the little boy and the little girl come out of mom. They don't come out of dad. But I guess my only thought is when you're a baby, you don't know. You know what I mean? It's like, do I want to have my dad see my privates now? No. You know, like, do I want to have him see it past the age of maybe like 6? Probably not. But if I have to take a bath and he's got to give me a bath, okay, fine. But yeah.
Get this done.
But when I'm 2 weeks old, a month old, I don't know the difference. And it's all the same. It's fine.
For sure. And I bet, though, that on baby number 2, even if it's a girl, his tone changes because he's so fresh to it. He's going to see and experience so much stuff that he doesn't want to.
Keep in mind, he's also so young.
Yeah.
I mean, they're they're early 20s.
For
so
sure.
They're both learning how to be parents. And obviously
he's 26. It's about that time. But yeah. And
it's about that time.
I'm just saying. It's not crazy.
It's about that time. You better watch your mouth. Don't even get me started. It's about that time. You're 26. It's about time you have kids. Son of a bitch. God. What the hell's wrong with you?
I didn't mean it like that. I'm just saying. God. At 26 and you're married. Like that's when they started a family. I was saying the time is right.
Everybody
for him.
Has their own time
Thomas
on when they want to have.
Thomas Rhett's 29 and he has 2 already.
Three. Third on the way. And I mean, they started early, in my opinion.
And that's the thing to do in country music. You get married before age 25 and you have kids.
Start popping out kids, apparently.
Lee Bryce has several kids.
Yeah. But I mean, Lee Bryce is also like 40. I can't remember how old his wife is.
I bet Google knows how old Lee Bryce is. He's 40 on the dot.
Yep. Boom.
1979.
And let's, you know, switch gears, talk about Lee for a second. He was like the ringleader.
He really brought it together because he was the one who'd been there before.
Right?
And it was really cool seeing him, Eli Youngman, and Kane Brown, because Eli Youngman they've been together 19 years, which
I mean, that's longer than most relationships.
All of mine.
Right.
Other than my
and
parents.
Mine put together with yours.
and then you go to, and then you have Kane Brown, who's new, but the biggest star on the stage.
Mm-hmm.
And then Lee, though,
And then you had Carly, you know, and Lee's got a song with Carly.
Yeah, and so he really did marry the whole thing together, Lee Bryce did. And the song, so Lee Bryce sang the song called Save the Roses.
Oh, God.
And
That was so good.
Aaron, how do you explain what the song is about? Because it's clearly about someone passing away.
It's about, you know, somebody passing away, the funeral, and, you know, here you are with all these roses and you're crying. And I think, isn't it basically about, like, go out and do stuff and,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
celebrate.
Spend time with me and love me now and save your roses. Like, I don't need your flowers when I'm dead. I want your love and goodness now while I'm alive. Is that what you took from it?
It's just a powerful song.
He said he'd never performed it. He literally had the music stand with the notes and the words written on it so he would not mess it up.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, and Lee Bryce, I just thought was really awesome for, you know, a multitude of reasons.
You know, he said Rumor was his biggest hit ever.
Which, that was kind of a surprise to me.
Like, well, here, let me play it real quick, and then we'll react to it.
To date, it's our biggest hit we've ever had. From how fast it went up the charts, and all the streams, and all the buying, and all the people, and just, I think it just related to just about everybody.
So yeah, biggest hit of his life.
And that's just so crazy, because, I mean, my favorite, and the song I thought was the biggest, would have been Hard to Love. And that song, I think, resonates with me for, a couple reasons.
He sang it, and everyone sang the whole thing with him, too.
Yeah. I mean, he's just, and that's the thing you don't know, you may not know, is that he also writes so many songs, like Crazy Girl for Eli Young Band.
Oh, yeah. I didn't realize it until that moment. I probably knew it, but it hadn't sunk in.
Oh, yeah. Maybe that you forgot.
And I told Eli Young Band, man, I thank you for that song, because so many nights I've spent slow dancing with girls falling in love on a dance floor in Texas.
Oh, my God. Thank you for letting me find ladies and love.
No, it's just that passion of a dance, and you're sharing, and you're kind of drunk a little bit, and you're kind of liking each other, and you're spinning her around a crazy girl, you know? It's like,
God,
come on, it's real, it's real.
You know what? This is why I can give you, pardon my French, I can give you shit about this stuff, you know? Like, yeah, that's what it is.
But that's all I could think during this song. But yeah, so Lee Bryce didn't remember where his part was, I guess, or he forgot the second verse or something, because they kind of skipped in the middle of the song and picked it back up. But it was really cool hearing them sing Crazy Girl with Lee Bryce. So that was obviously a really cool moment for them.
Yeah, there was just a lot of, I'm trying to think of another great moment that I really walked away from. I'm looking at, because we still have all the artists from 10 Man Jam on.
I have a moment.
Okay.
Scotty McCreery.
Oh, I was getting ready for this.
When he says, I bet you I'm the only one on stage that has a grandmother whose name is Guadalupe, Francesca, whatever the name is. It's like four names long because he's a quarter Puerto Rican.
And which is like, you would, again, never know that, never think that. It's just so crazy.
The other big moment right around that same time was the Carly Pearce and Lee Bryce singing I Hope You're Happy Now, because they had only sang that one other time live, and that was
at the Grand Ole Opry.
Yeah, and so we got the second time. I thought that was super cool. Lee told me that he hadn't practiced. He had to go back to the hotel room to figure out how to, you know, if he could remember all the parts and stuff. Here, I actually have some of it right here. Let's hear it. You want to listen to it real quick?
Mm-hmm.
I shot this video, so.
It's all on me. It's my mistake. I said no love you a little too late. But I guess there ain't a right time. And I don't know why it's
awesome.
Yeah, really, really great. Really great.
And it kind of gave me chills because, well, here's a little story. My boyfriend broke up with me the day before 10 Man Jam. And so, when I was listening to that song, I was like, well, this is going to be, this stings a little.
Yeah, but
little
at the
bit.
Same time, there's a double entendre there.
Yeah.
That I love about it because I get it. You know, it was written from a place of kind of pain and hurt, and it's a breakup song for a lack of better terms. But I love the double entendre of, I hope you're happy now, because I literally hope you're happy now. Like,
oh,
I hope that you find
you can take
happiness.
It negatively or positively.
For sure, yeah. You know, and I think that a lot of life is like that. So that's why I really like the song. I think that they sounded really, really good, too.
I mean, I didn't realize, and when you're standing there on stage, you can hear it, and you're like, oh, they sound good. And when it's recorded, then you're like, you kind of almost get the realness. And how it sounds, and man, you can still tell that they still sound amazing.
Yeah, the huge voices.
Yeah,
and I've consistently said Carly Pierce has one of my favorite voices. Like, I really do think she's great. Actually, I read her a letter that I wrote. Did I tell you about this?
No,
I didn't tell you.
No, oh, now I'm looking new. At you like you're high. What?
Yeah, so I wrote her this letter and I read it to her because when I was preparing for the interviews on Sunday night, I'm at this place in my life where I feel compelled to share things whenever I think them. If I deeply feel something about somebody or something, I want to say it instead of holding it in. And I was feeling compelled about Carly Pierce. So I wrote this letter to her and then I read it to her and I thought I was going to make her cry, but I don't think she cried. I wasn't looking at her. I almost started crying while I was reading, honestly.
Oh dear God.
Yeah. But I know I'm just an emotional person like that when I get in those like deeply emotional places.
So
like,
what did the letter say? Or are you just going
to
like,
I mean, you want to read it to you here? Let me see if it's
okay,
on my
yeah.
phone still. Cause I wrote
it on my
phone.
I'll pretend I'm Carly Pierce.
All right. I mean, I'm sure there's somewhere out there is a recording of it. I'm sure. Let me go to my Gmail real quick because I have it saved. So basically, when she first came here back in, it was like 3 years ago, I think, and I was listening to her, and I was still kind of finding my way too in country music, for lack of better terms. Like I was kind of figuring out my brand, I guess you could say. Okay. So there was this like, and I was listening to her sing, and I knew that she was, you know, relatively new, and I know how difficult it is in this industry, you know. And here it is. I found the letter. So, I thought I found the letter. Oh, yes. Oh, here it goes. Carly, when I first met you, it was your radio tour, and you played for a few of our staff and maybe some listeners, but one of the things that I remember was how committed to your dream you were. It seemed like you'd had some really tough hurdles and had fought to get where you were, and you were going to take full advantage of the opportunity. You scored number one with every little thing, and I was thrilled for you, mainly because I was kind of worried. I know how tough it is in this industry, and a lot of artists, male and female, come through, and they don't all get that number one or the recognition their voice and story deserves. I'm also glad you found someone to help inspire and build with, because something else I took from the first meeting was that you truly wanted to be in love, and I'm happy you found it. Merry Christmas, Nick Russo.
Oh, that's very nice.
Yeah, it's, you know, and that was the totality of how I felt about her. And I don't know why I felt a personal connection to her. I can't explain why, but I felt compelled to share it, so I did.
Did you interview her at Kima?
I did. No, I didn't. There weren't any interviews at Kima. I interviewed her. I did the Whoa with her at Kima, the dance.
Oh, okay.
And then, I interviewed her before her show with Luke Bryan when she was opening for him in the Woodlands. I believe it was Luke Bryan.
Oh, that's right. Yes, I do remember
John Party
that. Yes.
was on that ticket too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I interviewed her before that show, and that was right after the engagement,
yes.
I believe. And so now she's married, you know, and she's getting family back home and stuff. And I'm just happy for her because, like, she really did make a life for herself. Like, she really did chase that dream, and she put it on the line, and there's a lot to be said for that.
Yeah, I agree. And a lot has changed in a year.
Oh, yeah. Tons. I mean, especially for her. Like, and I think, I Hope You're Happy Now, I think it could get to number one. It's a really good song.
I agree.
And anything that Luke Combs helps write, it's probably going to do really well.
I mean, it's not any small potatoes.
Now, there was the other story that's kind of been circulating that's not really country music.
Oh, God.
Is the Peloton commercial.
Oh, yes. The Peloton commercial. Is it sexist or not?
So I watched it for the first time, I think, with you in the room. I'm baffled. I don't get it. And to me, it's just the cancel culture BS that it's like this, oh, if enough people are mad about it, it's going to make news. And then if it makes news, there might be an action taken that, you know, is because we were so mad. But at the end of the day, it's just people mad on the internet. She's riding a bike, and I don't get why it's sexist.
So on Christmas, the husband gets her a Peloton, and then it follows her through this journey of a year of doing Peloton and her fitness, her fitness lifestyle getting better or whatever.
And then the guy's like yelling, "You got this. You've done it for a week. Congratulations."
Yeah. I guess people thought it was sexist, maybe because it was a guy getting a woman exercise equipment, trying to insinuate like you're fat, and you look at the woman and she's like 117 pounds.
So are they alluding to the fact he surprised her with this, or did he just buy it for her? Because to me, there's the difference. Because most women who have a husband who buys them a Peloton for Christmas, the woman wants it for her lifestyle because she doesn't want to go to spin class, or that's how I perceive it. She doesn't want to go to the gym. She just wants to ride the bike at home. Maybe the kids are at home, or maybe there's something at home and she just wants to work out at home.
And if you can afford a Peloton.
That's the other part. That's what I'm saying. Like, it's not like the people that are working out at the YMCA for $40 a month or $50 a month or LA Fitness or whatever, they're probably not going to spend the money on a Peloton.
No.
But if you can afford a $2,500 piece of workout equipment in your home, then that's the kind of gift you get somebody.
I agree. I understand, that's the thing. People are looking way too into it.
And it's a commercial. At the end of the day, it's a commercial.
It's a commercial. I mean, I'll be honest, the commercial just annoyed me just because I was like, and it's funny because she was on the Today Show talking to Hoda Kotb about why she thought this became such an issue. And, well, I have a comment after she gets done talking.
Talking about, did you understand why people got spun up about it?
I mean, honestly, I think it was just my face.
Like, what do you mean?
My fault. My eyebrows looked like worried, I guess.
I don't know. People there's a picture behind me, y'all. That's the one that she says is at the heart of this whole thing.
I'm telling you, it was my face. That was the problem. And it just went, exploded from there. She looks worried. And I'm like, oh, no, my eyebrows.
They moved. So I guess a lot of people have Botox and stuff and their eyebrows stay straight.
I'm not used to seeing it anymore. It's too much.
So when this all started happening, I realized TMZ was following you. This one was following you. I was thinking a lot of actresses would have said, aha, this is my moment, and been on every single television show. We kind of begged you to come, and you said no about 5 times, and then you decided to come. Why are you so reluctant? Like, some people would have seized on this moment.
Well, I kept feeling like there was two camps where, some people thought that it was a really big deal, and other people thought it was no big deal. So I'm like, maybe I should just wait for it to blow over, and then it won't just seem like I'm trying to keep myself in the press and in the news, So when it didn't blow over and people kind of started answering for me, and I saw some articles where they grabbed some stuff from very old interviews, I was like, okay, I'll just let everyone know I'm fine. I'm okay. I'm not in a rehab for.
I mean, I think she's hilarious.
Well, I'll be honest. We can, by the way, when we chop it, we can just chop and said when she talks about the Botox, and we could just end it there. So for me, that commercial honestly did bother me because of her face.
Wow.
not because she's not a gorgeous, because she's gorgeous. So that, I don't know.
Was her reaction, to the verbiage in the acting that made
The acting to me, I just thought seemed a little phony, and it's like, oh my God, so here we are, we're doing day 3. I don't know, something about the way it was acted out.
I see what you're saying, because it was almost like she was putting on so strong for the camera to pretend to be doing it for the camera that it counteracted the point, because she was supposed to look happy and normal, but instead she was trying to act like she was a real woman, and a real woman probably is a little insecure in that moment.
Yeah, it just I don't know if the word is contrived. I just felt it just seemed a little much.
I do love how it hurt. It was my face.
It was my face. And it's like, well, you might be right.
And she's not wrong about the eyebrows moving and the face moving and stuff.
Yeah, because in that shot that when they're talking about her eyebrows, they pan to that one still of it, and she does look like she's terrified,
Well, if I had a electrical bike screaming at me, I'd probably be a little terrified, too.
Right. Well, if I was paying that much, I'd be terrified. But then again,
A $2,500 stationary bike.
plus, what is it, $60 a month or something like that?
Oh, there's a membership included?
Yeah, because you get live feeds of your bike routine.
Wow.
So, you know, like, remember in the commercial, she's like, oh, my God, he said my name. You know?
Oh, that's right, because it's a live instructor that you kind of take part in this event.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's pretty telling, though. Yeah, I mean, the personal trainer is now in your living room through the computer. I mean,
it's also freaking scary.
It always has been, though, too, if you think about it. Like, Tybo, if that dude could have said your name in a personalized video, they would have paid an extra $20 for it. Come on, Nick, keep kicking those legs. Keep throwing those punches. Right? Now left, now right, now left, now right, now kick.
Oh.
I did Tybo for a little while.
I did the Brazilian butt lift workout routine for a while.
I think I was like 15 when that came out. And I was like, Mom, we got to do this. Look.
Yeah.
I convinced my mom on a lot of infomercials as a kid.
You know what? I'm a sucker for marketing. So if it's, you know, on TV, Facebook ads now, I'm all about it.
Well,
I'm
you know how it works or at least in the old days on the infomercials, they would just run that 15-minute video over and over and over. So you'd watch it four times in an hour. And then by the fourth time, you're ready to see that one little feature that you really like, and you're sold. Like, I could go tell my mom. I remember Adam's Tight Lie was the golf club, right? Adam's very first golf club they ever put out. And their quote was, you could hit it from anywhere. The guy's hitting it off the cart path, and he's hitting it off the road, and he's hitting it off the, you know.
That was a thing.
Out of the thick grass, out of the tall grass, the short grass, like everywhere. And I was like, Mom, this club, I could hit it from anywhere. I need this club, you know. And my mom ended up buying it, and then it convinced me that I could hit it, and I hit that club amazing forever. It was my best club.
It was actually something that you bought on an infomercial that worked?
Yeah.
The way they said so?
Totally, until I broke it on, like, I don't know if it was on accident or purpose, probably mixed the two.
Oh, did you have a temper tantrum?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. I stopped doing that a long time ago, but as a kid, it was easy to get really ticked off about golf. Yeah. But yeah, anyways, like, infomercials always burnt, and then always got me. And then Living in the 90s CDs, remember those?
No.
You remember those? It was a four disc set that you could buy Living in the 90s. It was like 1990 through 1994, the 94 to 96, 96 to 98, 98 to 2000 or 99 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I didn't remember a lot of the early 90s music because I was only like 10 at that time. So like,
shut your mouth.
So like the song by Divinyls, I Touch Myself.
Oh,
I remember I was like 14 and I heard that and I was like, oh, am I allowed to listen to this? Like,
what is
she
singing?
This is bad. What is she singing about it? Oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. I remember I was like blown away by it.
I remember that song coming on the radio and I mean, that was really provocative.
How do you say her name? Divinyls? Divinyls?
It's the Divinyls.
Divinyls, yeah. I remember that song just like being super bad. I was like, wow, I didn't know that I was supposed to. I didn't know that was on there.
You know what song it was for me that I thought was super bad when I was a little kid? It was Salt and Pepper, Push It.
Oh.
Yeah.
All right.
Push It real good. I was like, this is naughty. You know?
Wait, am I allowed to listen to this?
This is nasty. They're talking nasty.
Yeah. So how did we get all the way on to infomercials and nasty 90s music?
Nasty 90s music. What was the last thing? Peloton. Yeah, buying it on TV.
What was the other two live crew?
They had some really nasty music, but it didn't play on the radio in my hometown.
Well, no, but it was in the 90s, wasn't it? Or was that 80s?
80s, 90s. Yeah, around there. But yeah, that never made it to see the light of day on any radio station in Portland, Oregon. I'll tell you that.
The CD that my parent or my friends would hide that we listened to was the Eminem CD, the first one.
Oh, yeah.
I remember like my parents or my friend had it and his parents didn't know it. And they weren't allowed. And this is right when burning CDs was out. So he would burn us all copies of the stuff. His older cousin or whatever would buy it for him. And then we could listen to it. We weren't supposed to be listening to it, but... like, he was talking about killing Kim and stuff.
My email keeps going off.
Is that what that is? So if you hear a ringing in the background, Aaron's late for an appointment.
No, it's just, I will be very soon. I just have this, my emails keep pops up. So sorry. Sorry, everybody.
Well, we made it pretty good. I think it was like 47, 48 minutes. So we're doing pretty well these days. It's not hard to keep talking. And I hope you enjoyed the 10-Man Jam recap, if you will, and all of our other babblings.
Yes, about
Peloton. I already told you about the Joe Rogan thing, what made me feel good about what I heard in his podcast.
No.
He's like talking to somebody. I think it was Tulsi Gabbard, one of the politicians, and they started talking about something else. She's like, oh, I'm sorry, we're getting off topic. He's like, no, don't be sorry. That's what we do here. We talk and we go where it goes. And I really loved that. I really loved that.
Because, yeah, because we
have been
a little...
I texted you immediately when you said it,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah, we've been a little self-conscious. I mean, maybe more so me than you about, you know, oh, we're kind of all over the place. But, I mean, it's just the flow of conversation, but we're still all over the place.
Yeah, and I think people... The feedback I've got, people enjoy it. And I know that... Hi, Mom.
Mom's listening.
For sure, for sure. So, anyways, all right, Aaron... thanks, I guess. Am I supposed to say thank you? Is this like an officer gives you a ticket?
Thank you very much.
Till the next one.
Yeah.